In the Dark Ages, say before 2001, the only one who ever saw everything was God. But now every surface you touch, knows and shares with selected partners and the NSA, your deepest, darkest browser histories and much, much more. But a growing field of artists, academics and technologists is aiming to regain a click or two of privacy. I asked our tech correspondent, Professor Aisling Kelleher, about the growing field of data obfuscation. So what do you think, is it necessary for us to develop some strategies in face of all the information that's now flowing about us behind our backs, as it were?
Yes, I do think it's probably about time that we as a kind of a general public began to think a little bit more deeply and maybe more proactively and aggressively about dealing with the amount of tracking and surveillance that been done on us as a populace. For example, there's a huge asymmetry in power between those who are being tracked and those who are doing the tracking. We don't know exactly how we're being tracked. We don't know what's been done with information that's been retrieved in this situation. And more particularly, we have no idea how it's going to be used in the future. So right now, whether it's camera surveillance out in the street or companies or even governments tracking our search history and what we're doing, our mobile location, using GPS data, what our cars are doing. There's huge amounts of inferences being made about who we are and what we're doing, whether we're up to good or bad. And we need to really begin to think about, is there a way that we can inject ourselves, put some control in there and kind of go back to maybe some of the earlier times understanding about what it means to be a private citizen, a private individual, that it means that you have, essentially, shouldn't you have the right to be left alone? And if we don't even know if we've been left alone, as Edward Snowden has kind of brought to our attention, then, you know, it's really time for the population to kind of wake up a little bit and perhaps think about, are there even low-level strategies that we can adopt to begin to take a little bit more control of our data and, you know, information about our activities?
But there is this assumption that if we take too much care with our information, then that's a suspicious behaviour in itself.
There's a whole slew of different ways you can think about, well, there's kind of the obvious ones. There could be technical strategies that we should adopt, or there should be legal strategies, or perhaps, you know, corporations or government entities, they should be the ones who are kind of taking the lead and kind of adopting a more ethical stance in what it is that they're about. And all three of those are maybe possible, but they still kind of invoke their own challenges, whether or not they might take a long time to do in the case of the law, or they might just, in the face of competitive advantage, why would a company do that? And technically, when you adopt a technical solution, often that is maybe very difficult for the general population to participate in, or something that only the technical elite. So I think one of the ways that people talk about it is through this idea of data obfuscation, which could be considered as the weapon of the week. Okay, so the idea that for those of us who don't necessarily have huge technical chops or are not part of a legal kind of push towards this, what are some of the really simple, normal, everyday strategies that we can use to begin to protect our own privacy? So data obfuscation is essentially how do you kind of hide the original data and mask it by the addition of kind of other random information that has either nothing to do with that original data or just kind of creates a cloak around it. So one example would be, many of us are familiar with using loyalty cards at the grocery store, or actually now they're kind of endemic, they're everywhere in all sorts of arenas. So instead of, you know, this loyalty card being just attached to you as an individual, perhaps you could share it with many other families, share that kind of the barcode or the information on that, so that you and perhaps a house that's full of 20 students, or, you know, a family next door or a whole neighborhood could share this one card. So you're still reaping the benefit of, you know, getting cheaper groceries or getting 2-for-1 deals without giving up, you know, your own privacy, or without the idea that there's now massing a database that has a really clear understanding of everything you buy, that you're clearly on a diet, you know, that maybe you're after going through a big breakup and you're eating a lot of cake and alcohol, that, you know, that there's all sorts of inferences that can be made about you that can be made much more difficult by this very, very simple strategy.
There's online and offline tracking, and one of the things that's happened with the offline tracking is where a lot of technology, as you say, is tracking our faces around the street. Now, some countries have made it illegal to cover your face in certain circumstances. So very quickly, from just messing around with corporate entities, you kind of leave this piece and head into the world of illegality, it seems.
Yes, this sense of that do we have, you know, in making certain things illegal, it seems that they're trying to put in the onus on the public, that we have some sort of moral or ethical obligation to share our data. For example, Mark Zuckerberg has talked about it, that it's a complete social norm to share your information. And I am concerned about that. I'm like, since when did it become a social norm? Since when should I just walk around and eagerly offer my face up to be tracked? It's like the same when you walk into large department stores and they use the strategy of showing you monitors so they can kind of make it very, very evident to you as you walk in, you are being tracked, you are being surveilled. I think there are some intriguing, I guess you could call them art projects that people are doing to think about, well, are there very kind of, again, analog strategies that you can use to circumvent these kind of face tracking software that's been used on cameras? So, for example, artist Adam Harvey, who's kind of an expert in this area of surveillance, he's developed this very intriguing strategy that combines fashion and makeup technologies. In this case, it's called CV Dazzle. And he has this fabulous lookbook that you can access online that tells you how to kind of create very avant-garde looking makeup on your face, very asymmetric hairstyles. For example, that you can walk around, you look maybe like you've just come from Fashion Week, or you look like you're dressed up as David Bowie for Halloween or something like that. But either way, you look rather unusual. You still look like a human, but to a camera, because of the shapes that you've put on your face, it's not identifiable as facial features. So this is one way that he's been developing to try and be like, you know, you have the right to walk around, to look fantastic and, you know, amazing, and also to be non-detectable to a non-human source, in this case, to a camera. So I think that's kind of one example. In this case, it's obviously not for everybody and very few people are going to do it, but it does more particularly draw attention to the fact that these cameras are not there necessarily just to protect merchandise. They're there to really draw a lot of inferences about you as you walk around a store, or peruse it and look at things, pick things up and put them down. All of that information is incredibly valuable to corporations in trying to think about how they can sell you more stuff.
Professor Aisling Kelleher there, and Aisling will be back to discuss some of those low-level strategies for data obfuscation next time on Culture File.